everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away?
The White Rabbit.
The White Rabbit.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Makes You Think, everybody's favorite Saturday show on Red Pill Project, along with, of course, Mars Chronicles coming up next, so stay tuned. This is where we talk about things that make you think naturally. We talk about these things a lot. Tonight, we're talking about survival situations, hypothetical situations, prepping, these types of things, because it comes up a lot during our conversations. Of course, before I tell you more about that, I'm joined by my co-host Jim Bob Oval Shorts over here from unconstitutionalawakening.com to see his podcasts and his content out there. He's rocking his new merch right now, Unconstitutional Awakening. Super cool, dude. Thank you for joining me.
Of course, man. I always look forward to Saturday evenings. This is one of my favorite things to do, is just sit here and talk about these wild what if scenarios, conspiracies, and whatever else we get into. So
yeah, we do certainly touch on everything under the sun, and everything that may or may not be under the sun as well.
I mean, you never know, there's just so many what ifs there out there, and I love investigating them. It's been one of my passions for many years. I guess that's why I'm kind of the kooky guy that I am.
Yeah, you wild pirate. So what actually inspired this conversation was during the week, we talk about a lot of the geopolitical situation happening around the world, news and events and politics and all this kind of thing on Morning Coffee, and also on the Daily Dose that Joshua Reed does. And we were having a conversation with the Red Pill family in one of our after chats on the social Red Pill. And one of our members was asking, you know, well, what if this, what if that, you know, what about in this case or that case? And we're all just like, man, going on at it. But it kind of inspired this conversation here of hypotheticals and kind of just kind of nonsensical war gamey type of conversation. War games, for people that don't know what that is, it's like a think tank for certain scenarios, and it's a preparedness type of conversation or meeting for a hypothetical situation.
Oh yeah, and I mean, and you know, when you first said something to me, and you said, where you were like, hey, you know, you want to talk about like what if zombies attack? I gotta say, the first thing that comes to my mind with it is a personal favorite. And if you haven't watched it, because I know you have your list.
Yeah,
it is Shaun of the Dead.
It is
probably my favorite zombie movie ever. Like, I just, like, that and Zombieland, those are my two, you know, number one movies. And, but, like, Shaun of the Dead, man, that'd be me with a cricket bat, bro, like, right out there in my little suit and tie.
All right, so we're going to get into all that. Dude, and so I want to talk about survival. I want to talk about zombie apocalypse situations here and just personal opinions and ways that we'd go about it. And I want to preface this with, like, I'm not the most prepared person in the world, although I'm perfect in other ways. Not everybody could be as perfect, but honestly, going through this stuff, I'm just joking, by the way, going through all this stuff, I realize I am so unprepared and lacking certain skills. And in the case of anything, a natural disaster, you name it, whatever it may be, look, chances are, if you are living in the United States of America, there's one time in your life you're going to have a flash flood. You're going to have a tornado in your area. You're going to have a hurricane go through your area. You're going to have power outages. You name it. Earthquakes. Whatever. Sure. Wars. Yeah. Who knows, right? Zombie apocalypse. If you want to get really fringy with it, it's possible. It's in the deck. Who knows? Alien invasion.
It could be Fallout, you know. I mean, I'm sure many people out there watching and listening have played Fallout, the video game, and I mean, we could end up in a Fallout scenario.
Yeah. So, as just so y'all know, as we go through this, We have all of our chats open here. Pilled, Rumble. Rumble's having a little bit of intermittent issues. It looks like it's up and going now. Hey, everybody that's tuned in there, maybe it's up now. And we're also on DLive and Clout Hub, so hit those subscribe buttons if you're there. And if you want to chime in, you guys can donate with that message, and we will guarantee, we're guaranteed to see it. You could also just put it in there. I probably may see it. I'll try to keep track of what's going on here if you are unable to afford that type of thing. But just by liking and subscribing, you are supporting the Red Pill Project. We greatly appreciate that. You guys, without you, we wouldn't be doing this on Saturday nights, let alone every single day, right? And just a reminder, after this show at 7:30 p.m. Pacific, there is going to be a new episode 4 of the Mars Chronicles with David Whitehead and Joshua Reed, and they have a very special guest. So stay tuned for that. We'll send out all the messages so you guys can tune in there. You're not going to want to miss it. Another great show.
And if you haven't watched any of that, like I advise you to, you know, I guess skip tonight and go back and watch the rest of it. It is some great information out there, man. Like that, I wish I could have been in the middle of that one, to be honest, because it has just been a fabulous conversation to watch.
Heck yeah, dude. It really is great. And if you guys are like super busy, work, travel, you know, a lot of people drive to work. They work all day, Monday through Friday or Monday through Saturday, who knows, or 7 days a week sometimes. We do have our audio podcasts, okay? So that drive time, listen to your audiobooks, listen to the Red Pill Project, tune into Jim Bob's podcast, whatever you do. It's all on Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts.
Absolutely. I'm everywhere now except for the Apple podcast, because they take like jumping through hoops to get on. Like, ooh.
Well, keep going, dude. You'll get there.
Thank you.
Absolutely awesome. Yeah, so thank you everybody. Let's get into it, man. I think that times, as they say, times they are a changing. And I think a lot of people see it. I think most of people don't. In the sense of seeing it to the extent of actually taking action and preparing for something and coming up with some kind of plan in the case of an emergency.
To quote Zombieland, and I think this is just important all the way around, regardless of the situation, the number one rule is cardio.
Yes, because physical training. Here,
if you're not, you know, be able to run that mile without getting completely winded and have to lay down and about die, well, you're already in trouble, because as a preparedness scenario period, your biggest thing should be cardio. Like, it really should. You need to be at least physically fit enough to survive any kind of situation, I would think.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff comes into play. I love Zombieland because it really does go through the laundry list of survival points, right?
I mean, right on the money about everything, zombie or not.
Yeah, and it does correlate to other things. And I don't know if you remember, I guarantee you do remember, the CDC came out with their zombie survival guidance, which I couldn't find.
That's a real thing. You couldn't find it?
Mm-mm. Oh, man. I think they took it down.
That wouldn't surprise me, but that was a real thing. I remember seeing it when it popped up. I was just like, they're really out here telling us, you know, they're worried about a zombie apocalypse.
Well, they also said that a lot of those things in the zombie apocalypse scenario preparedness type thing, all of these things transfer over to a more realistic type of emergency situation.
Sure.
And it's just a fun way to get people to pay attention to how to prepare in the case of an emergency. You know, so let's start with zombies because it's the most far out there one. It's the funnest one. And I've been thinking about it probably the most out of everything else. Cardio, like you said, is super important. Something we all need to work on all the time. I know I can't, my collarbones are covered. Usually I can see my collarbones. I can see my cheeks. Like, I'm a little pudgy. I could work on my cardio for sure. But just these little things increase your survival rate in the case of like a shit hits the fan scenario, like a zombie apocalypse or whatever it may be, by a lot. And most people aren't preparing at all. So survival increases exponentially with,
and you know, you don't have to go all out and have all this Gucci gear and all this kind of, you know, bells and whistles and, you know, things like that. There's there's a small list of things that you could carry in a knapsack. In fact, a bag that I actually carry in my van and that I actually try to tell people to go get is like a little $40 bag that you can get off of Amazon that has a 3-day survival, you know, thing. Like it's, and it's, and it's, and it's little backpack, you know, size, so that you could, so that you can, you know, if you were in kind of situation, you'd have a way to have water, a way to have a little bit of nutrition, a way to have a shelter and a blanket and a poncho and a little hatchet and stuff. Like it's worth having because you could be anywhere. And if, you know, as long as you had that bag with you, you'd be able to at least make it out of the, you know, make it out alive, hopefully.
Yeah. Or at least be able to go on the go and have shelter to stay dry. There are a list of things that are priority in a survival situation, especially if you're out in somewhere with just what you have on you. Number one is shelter. And I was asking myself, why is shelter more important than water? And it's because, and I don't know if you know this, it's because you could die faster not being in shelter than you could die by not having water. Correct. You could die overnight not having a shelter. So that's why they, a lot of the time, survivalists consider shelter to be the number one priority. That is from clothing to a tarp, like bare minimum. Your clothing or anything you could cover yourself with, that's your shelter. A pile of leaves could be a shelter on a cold night and keep you alive through the night.
When I go out camping and catfishing, everybody hates going with me because I like to rough it. And I bring two tarps. One that I can string in between the trees above me and one to lay on the ground below me. So that way I've got something to keep the rain off me and keep the bugs from crawling up on me while I'm laying on the ground. I'm not, you know, it doesn't have to be a fortress because I'm way out far away from people where nobody's going to find me. It's just something to keep me dry.
In my standard bag, which is my oh shit bag, the one that I grab in case my house is on fire or I'm being chased away or something by zombies, tarp. Plastic. It's actually not even a tarp. It's plastic. A big plastic. It's basically a tarp.
Kind of like a painter's plastic, like little rollout thing that you would just.
Kind of, yeah. It's a good heavy duty plastic for shelter. A hammock. It's also shelter. Yes. They could be combined. And a bunch of other things. One of the things that you mentioned was a hatchet.
Yes.
The hatchet, I think, is it's probably what I would choose during a zombie apocalypse to defend myself from zombies, because not only is it good for defense, close combat, it's also good for chopping trees, splitting logs, whittling, all kinds of things, saw cutting, whatever. There's not really sawing, but
there's actually a very a story that I read as a child that was one of my favorite books that was actually based on a true story called Hatchet.
Oh.
A boy was in a plane that crashed in Canada, and he survived with nothing but a hatchet.
I noted that.
It's an older book. It's definitely a lower reading level or whatever, but it's a good story, and it's like a good. You know what I mean? You know, they tried to make it for middle school kids. You know what I'm saying?
That's fine.
It's a good true story, and like it gives you some, you know, insight into panic situations, because, you know, I mean, think about that. If you were on a plane, a little two-person pilot plane, and it suddenly went down in the middle of the Canadian wilderness, what would you do?
Yeah, I think honestly, I probably wouldn't be. Like I said, I'm not very prepared for these kinds of things, but probably more than your average person.
Hey, and that's all that truly matters.
Yeah,
because if you're a little bit more prepared than somebody else, either you can make it a little further, or you could, you know, help somebody else that it could in turn help you get further. You know, there's ways to swap skills, I guess you could say.
Absolutely, and that's very important. Skills are something you could take with you, even when you have nothing physical with you, right?
Yes,
and you are valuable. So. You are a valuable part to a community at that point. And I don't know, like, how many I think honestly, times are changing. I grew up in the suburbs. I live in the suburbs still. I spent part of my day to day trying to get the hell out of here. I'm trying to go out, get out in a little bit more of a country type area, and work on this stuff. I think a lot of people are going that direction. A lot of people are starting gardens. A lot of people are being more frugal. A lot of people are, you name it, they're trying it out. They're learning new skills. They're figuring out their niche.
I actually talked to a lady on my show this week that is trying to revive the Victory Garden.
The Victory Garden?
It was popular after World War II. Everybody grew, you know, tomatoes and beans or whatever in their yard and shared amongst their neighbors.
Ah.
What their neighbors didn't grow, you know, they grew and stuff like that. And
it's perfect.
Right. And I think that that's a fantastic thing because those skills, like you're saying, would be fantastic. I think a good skill everybody should take the time to learn is how to filter your own water.
Water?
Water.
Like, that is key. Water is key, 100%. I actually have a list of skills because a common misconception, and you kind of really brought this to my foresight through your TikToks, is people think they need to know it all. No, right. That's not right. Have your one thing you're fucking master at, and you're going to be invaluable. And so I have a list of skills of things, which I am not proficient in any of them. I, you know, can dabble in some of them and whatever here and there. I need to get better. But here they are. And actually, water purification didn't even make my list.
Interesting.
But I guess it is a skill. And
sure, you can't really just drink from any puddle unless you have like a Life Straw or one of those gravity bags that you can buy now.
Yeah.
But I mean, there is ways to take sand and rocks and, you know, use charcoal and filter your own water.
Yeah, personal charcoal filter using plastic bottles and whatever, anywhere from Life Straws, things you could buy, systems you could buy that require energy. But there's a lot of things you could do, even bleach solutions. If you study and learn how to do that, you can do that. And water, the cool thing, the interesting thing about water is, okay, you need like a gallon a day or something crazy, right?
Sure.
Or more. If you're because you're not just drinking it, you're not just cooking with it, you're also cleaning with it and washing yourself with it to stay sanitary, because you need to stay sanitary to survive, because then you start getting into health. Well, I'm not going to have 100 gallons for the next 2 months stacked up. I just don't have the storage capacity. Most people don't. So what do? Is you figure out how to filter the freaking water. And find a source of fresh water.
Yes, that's where I was about to go. I definitely recommend looking into learning how to do some witching, or dowsing, as other people would call it. Just down here in the South, we call it witching. I have seen more success rate in them finding water than professionals coming out there to drill for a well. And it's a very, very, easy thing to learn, really. And you can find sources of spring water and such even on your own property, you know, if you actually use this method to look around. And I do, you know, because, yeah, you're right. You know, having a storage of water, I don't find it important. I would find it more important to find a stream or a creek or some sort of water close by that I would set my camp up at.
Mm-hmm. And then what if your house gets attacked and burned down? What if you get ran off? What if you're forced to leave by a military or a government that does martial law in your area, and then you're faced with the choice? Do I join this tyranny and work for them, which is basically slavery, or do I go and try to live on my own, right? Or do I join this big group of crazy people with weird ideals, or do I try to go live on my own? Maps. Where's the water when you have to go on the go? You can't carry all your guns and ammo. You can't carry all your water. So it's like all these things you have to think about, and where the hell are you going to go? This is when you get into plan B, plan C with people, you know.
Sure. I mean, you can have a, I guess in a sense I do have a bug out plan. Like, I mean, I've got my plan to, you know, hold the fortress down if I need to hold the fortress down. And if I go, you know, I plan on laying low to get to a kind of predisclosed destination between several friends of mine that we've discussed in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That is quite the large chunk of abandoned Indian reservation down here in the South that's been abandoned since the late 1800s because mm-hmm. they just cut the land off. It's 2,000-3,000 acres worth of land off of a river, and they'd never find me again. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? I'd be prepared to do something like that if need be.
Yeah. So the thing interesting about, okay, I'm out, you know, in a rural area or even just completely very far from any civilization is you do get packs of people roaming through. They could come through 50 people, 100 people come through your area. How are you going to defend that land? Do you even have a group capable of it type thing?
Right. Like,
you got to think about these things.
Sure.
It could happen. It could happen in a crazy, weird, wacko world.
I do highly recommend when you are like building shelter in something like this, if it's plausible, make your shelter as high off the ground as possible.
Really? Oh, because for visibility and that type of thing?
Not just that, but safety. I mean, how many people are looking up if they're out in the woods? You know, if you're hiding out in the woods somewhere,
Some master camouflage
and forest. Yeah, shit. And you know, they could walk right underneath you, walk right past you if you had the proper kind of setup up there in the treehouse or whatever. Like, and you could do it with tarps. I actually watched this lady on TikTok do it with rolls of duct tape, and she made herself like a little hut to sleep in
duct
way
tape's
high
amazing.
In the treetop. It is. And you know, like there's, you know, I think duct tape and paracord are two things that you should absolutely have in your bug out bag.
Oh, because yeah.
They will save your life. They're great things to have.
Absolutely, dude. And let's go through some of these skills.
Yeah.
In no particular order.
All right.
Hunting and fishing.
Any ways to do that?
Yeah, and in my to-go bag, I don't have anything to fish with, you'd think, ooh, upon first look, right? Actually, I do have a fishing line.
You can get you a look into this, because I carry one, actually. You can get you a telescoping pole that crushes down to about this size that'll just hang on the side of your go bag. And you could just, you know, bam, there's you a one. Or, of course, if you're good at things and you've got fishing line, stick. Bamboo stick's the best.
Bamboo, okay. So, look, I say all I have is fishing line, which you could wrap it around a stick, you can fish, but I need a hook, right? Well, I have sewing needles.
Ooh.
So I can make hooks.
You can make them out of the little tin can pieces.
Oh, yeah. That's aluminum, though. It's weak.
It is.
Any wire, you find a wire fence, cut that wire fence. You can make hooks. Sharpen one end, loop the other. Tool you're going to need to do that, though, is pliers. Needle nose pliers are going to save your ass if you need to make fishing hooks.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Like, so they're heavy, but useful.
Especially if you can get a few, you know, decent hand tools. So, by the way, it is weak, but I was totally shown this trick for an emergency situation if you ever needed a hook and you were trying to fish.
Cool.
This is now
a hook.
Folded and, you know, kind of stronger because of the way that I folded it.
Interesting.
You can attach the line to this and sharpen the little end a little bit there and throw you a worm on there and you'll eat tonight.
Good. Knowing how to fish is a great, valuable skill. You're going to be bringing food to the table in a situation where, let's say, it's the Great Depression. There's people in these communities. There's people outside the communities. People are trying to survive. Having a fish is going to be more valuable than... having food is going to be the most valuable thing out there, period.
Sure.
And water.
Sure.
What?
Here comes some of Jim's little weird things that he does. Tiny bottles of alcohol.
Oh.
In a bag, because it's very light, of tobacco.
Why?
Why? Because you will have the power to trade with people.
Okay.
Because people, you know, I mean, I actually don't drink. I'm not a drinker. So, you know, I actually just have, it's been something I've done for years. I'll buy those little $5 or even the little $1 tiny things of alcohol and keep a couple of them in my bag for, you know, that kind of situation. Because if I don't have any food that night, I guarantee that if somebody that did would fuck a trade for a tiny bottle of whiskey or a few cigarettes, you know, it's just trying to be
better yet. It ties into, you know, that only lasts so long. What about home brewing and fermentation in general, which overlaps a lot with other skills?
I I love all that kind of stuff. Like, if you can ferment your own stuff, like, yeah, you that is a skill that is a lot better than a lot of other people, because it's something that has been lost, I think, throughout the past couple decades.
Yeah, not many people know how to ferment anymore. Here's another one: foraging, knowing your plants, having books and resources on hand to know what's edible, what's not, is just super valuable.
And one that I can always recommend is called Back to Eden.
Back to Eden.
It's by Jethro Klaus. It is got, I mean, it's this thick, and it's full, you know, it's lightweight, it's a paperback, but I mean, it's still full of identifications and even uses for the plants that you're trying to identify. It does have pictures in it, and it does have definitions and words, and I mean, I consider it my plant Bible. Like, it's my go-to when I need to check on things. And mushrooms too. I think learning how to forage for mushrooms is a great skill to have.
Especially considering some of them are just utterly poisonous, and you eat one and die.
Right. Like, I mean, but at the same time, there's a ton of them out there that you can eat, and
for sure,
you know, they can sustain you. So, you know, being
they're delicious too.
Being able to, you know, learn what they look like, and they're, don't get me wrong, it's not the easiest task, because there's plenty of them out there that are doubled, you know what I'm saying? Like, they,
yeah, like magic mushrooms and another poisonous mushroom,
right? As a twin. And there's two kinds of turkey tails out there. There's a turkey tail that's good for eating and good for tinctures and stuff, and there's one that will kill you if you eat it. So you've it's definitely something to learn. Don't just go out there and just start picking mushrooms and eating them, because it can turn into a bad situation.
And people practice foraging for years. This is something it's a cool hobby. It's not just like, oh, I want to learn how to be, you can't be a master at all these things. It's just not realistic.
But if you can learn how to recognize things that are at least edible.
Yes. Or have a book that you could reference.
Yeah. Then you definitely survive a lot longer.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of rabbit starvation?
Rabbit starvation? No.
You can't.
Oh, you know, yes, I have.
In a situation like this, you can't eat just rabbit, because you would actually starve if that was your only diet.
Right, because they don't have. They're too lean. It's too lean of a meat to survive on solely. You need fat. It's so interesting.
So, you know, be careful out there. If anybody was to ever end up in one of these situations, rabbit is delicious and it would help you get through a day or two. But don't make it your permanent thing, because it could kill you.
Yeah, for my reading, they say you could go about a week with a calorie deficit to get by, but any more than that, you're probably gonna die eventually, so, or not be able to get food for yourself.
And you know, with hunting and stuff like we're talking about, you could also do trapping, you know what I'm saying? Like,
heck,
you could build traps. Like, there's things where you could build.
Rope comes in handy, or twine or string, which, if you have rope, you could divide it down into smaller pieces, which is a skill in itself. That ties into sewing, knitting, crocheting, braiding, knot tying, textiles, threads, ropes, making a net out of string or rope, divided down into string, make a net for fishing. It's like these things go together.
So maybe one of those little tiny folding shovels would be also something good to have.
Heavy.
Because, but, I mean, well, they do make military ones that are super light and almost like, like, you know, just hook on. Yeah, it's made out of
titanium, maybe. I don't know.
And it folds out, and you know, it's real compact. And because, you know, you could dig yourself a little hole to make, you know, a little trap for like a small rodent or something.
Like a pitfall trap.
Yeah, it wouldn't be, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you, and not even a big one. I'm just saying, you know, like, for, like, say you're trying to catch a raccoon because it is edible if it's not got rabies, you know. But like, you could make a small little 3-foot. You know, trap with a tiny shovel and get him to fall in and catch him. Like, I guess in a moment of desperation, anything's gonna work, right?
Yeah, that will work with big animals too, deer and stuff like that. You can dig a big hole, make it fall in there.
You can even dig a hole to build a shelter if you wanted to. To be real,
yeah.
In the side of like, you know, I don't know how much you walk in the woods. I walk in the woods a lot, and there's always like areas where it's, you know, the roots and the ground have adjusted, so you've got like these little almost canyons in different areas. They're not huge, but they're just like little valley canyons.
Yeah,
right into the side of that and dig underneath a tree and boom, instant cave.
Instant shelter cave. Super cool. Other skills, gardening and farming. Valuable. Cooking and canning.
Yes.
As well. Kind of goes, ties into that.
Yes, you can have all the hunting skills you can in the world, but if you don't know how to cook the food that you just hunted.
Or preserve it.
Yeah.
What if you kill a big animal? You're not going to cook all of it and eat it that day. It's not realistic. You need to save it. And if you don't have power, how are you going to do that? Someone's got to know how to preserve it.
Time to start learning how to dry age again. You know, back in the day, they didn't have refrigerators and freezers and stuff to put things in. So they learned how to smokehouse and how to dry preserve things. There's many answers to that, too.
And one thing I read, and I was like, of course. And this was like in a situation where, let's say, typical systems were used to go down, like electricity goes down for whatever reason. Insert it here, whether it be a zombie apocalypse, nuclear war, just terrorist attacks or whatever. Power goes out. After 3 days, people are going to be looting stores. After that, they're going to be looting houses. If you're cooking, this is something interesting. If you're cooking, someone smells it, they're coming over. So it's smart to, if you're worried about people smelling your food, add all of your spices after you're done cooking what you're going to eat.
Okay.
To avoid the smell carrying with the heat.
I mean, that smoke. That makes sense. We actually kind of talk about this scenario a lot in my group chat. And
yeah.
One thing that we say about like urban people because we got a couple of military vets in our group, and they'll tell you, they say their thoughts is, if you're an urban thing, try to lock yourself down and wait out as long as you possibly can, mm-hmm. because all the idiots are going to go out there and kill themselves first.
A lot of people are going to kill each other.
That
initial panic where nobody's prepared and they're running in on the stores, and then,
And then, you know, so after about, if you can successfully lock yourself down for about 3 weeks, you will have an amazing time going out and, you know, rummaging and foraging for all kinds of things, because the groups of people are going to be way down because of chaoticness.
But if you do have to go out, you could even stay at your house. Eventually, people's houses are going to be claimed by the government, martial law. You might get military coming through, depending on your area. Who knows? But when you go out, you have to be invisible. You have to fit in. You have to blend in. And then there's psychology that comes into it, too. You don't want to get in a situation where you're killed, obviously. This is about survival, right? So making eye contact with a stranger is not something you're going to want to do, especially if you're alone. You're not going to want to have logos and flashy things on your clothing. You're not going to want to wear jewelry. You're not going to want to... You're going to want to just be... You want to blend in. Definitely blend in by all costs.
That means I got to get rid of the awesome socks, because they'll see me coming from a mile away.
They will. Or if you have a logo or like something that just catches their eye, they're going to be like, what's this? You know,
Who's this guy? And as someone who has done a lot of stuff like in the woods, and I used to be big into like playing, I guess, war games. We used to do paintball a lot. I found that black was more of a flattering color for camouflage than actual camouflage. Because when you look out into the woods, you see tons of shadows. And that black actually could keep you from being seen in the shadows, even in the daytime, deep in the woods. I always say go to the woods because, you know, I mean, I feel you have a higher chance of survival in the trees than you do.
If you know how to survive.
Maybe.
Some people, most people are more inclined to join a large group of people.
Absolutely.
That are in like a warehouse or a big building or a prison.
Or a Bass Pro Shop. We joke around. We joke around and say that we need to, if the zombie apocalypse comes or the martial law comes, we're going to all meet at the Bass Pro Shop because we'll be good. They can't get in there to that. It's a fortress.
Yeah, dude. Or a prison. If you lock down a prison or something like that, completely walled in. We've seen the movies. Perfect. You could farm within the fence.
What was it in Dawn of, Dawn of the Dead? They were locked up in a mall. Like, you couldn't ask for something better.
Yep. All kinds of situations. I'm going to look at more skills here.
Sure.
Sewing, knitting, crocheting, braiding, knot tying. Yeah. Beer, mead, wine, pickles. That's with home brewing and fermentation. mechanics and engineering is huge.
And I implore people to take the chance when it comes to like mechanics. You are more capable than you think you are. Like I do a lot of my own mechanic work, and I can honestly say I've had no true formal training. I've just grown up working on race cars and other cars and stuff like
that. Yeah, learning fundamentals and stuff like that.
And like, just for playing with it, like my van's currently parked at the moment because I'm doing the water pump on it, and it's mm-hmm. one of those advanced water pumps that I got to almost drop the engine out to get to it. But it's actually mm-hmm. something I'm capable of, and I don't have to spend the money to go to someone else to, you know, get it done. So, and you know, something like that, like if I was to say find an abandoned vehicle that was full of gas and something was wrong with it, I might be able to fix it and get on the road.
Or repurpose the engine. Who knows? Like, there's, think about the old folks in our lives, whether it be your grandfather or whatever. They knew how to fix things. Or like, if you're in a more rural area, they might have used the same engine, same little motor for 3 or 4 different things on the farm, repurposed, move it around, re-engineer it. Fixing things, tinkering with things when things were built better to be fixed.
But, true. That's another. You know, you gotta find old stuff. If you find old stuff, like it'll still work. I actually promise you, if you went and pulled a '60s or '70s model 350 engine block out of a junkyard, we could make it run because they were built to last.
Yeah, you know, dude. What I'm saying?
And on carburetors and you know, this gets into learning how to maybe make your own biodiesel, because if you could find a diesel vehicle, you could find reusable stuff to turn into, you know, methane to run into that.
Which leaks into kind of a scientific type of
skill,
which could also lead to things like water purification when you're talking about distilling.
Yes. Distilling, though, is a good skill to have, because not only can you do water purification, but you could make spirits, which goes back to being able to barter with.
Yeah.
And you know, of course, the biodiesel thing, that'd be something you'd be able to, you know, run out of things like that. There's a lot to do when it comes to being able to do something like that. Like, that opens up a lot of doors.
Yeah. And in the long term, in a survival situation, you have medical sciences. Well, that's short term as well. But one of the most important ones as well is teaching, childcare. Yes. Natal and postnatal care. This type of thing is a huge skill. Somebody's got to watch the children while people go do runs or when people are working all day, right? So knowing this kind of stuff, knowing how to give childbirth, knowing how to raise children and teach children things, entertain children. People forget entertainment. You need games. You need to distract yourself. You need to have fun in downtime or you're going to lose your damn mind.
Gotta enjoy the little things. There was another Zombieland rule.
Enjoy the little things.
Yeah, he was after a Twinkie the whole movie.
Oh yeah,
I mean, it's just something silly and little, but like, you know, it's literally, but I mean it's more of a metaphor. Like, really look at it. Like, there's nothing wrong in one of these situations to slow down and connect back to yourself, even if you've got to find a moment to, you know, meditate or breathe or find a way to listen to a song in your head, even just to keep from going off the deep end and turning south.
Yeah. A lot of people forget pens and pencils and paper in these kinds of situations, which can help you keep your sanity, writing, keeping inventory of your supplies, and this kind of thing. Do you think that any type of these shit hit the fan scenarios are likely?
Yes. Yes, because society is the anomaly. Humans have always been survival creatures. So the anomaly is going to cease to exist one day, and we'll have to go back to surviving, I believe, especially when you've got things like the current, you know, psychopaths at the World Economic Forum trying to force people to do things. I think society is very likely to fracture, and there's going to be the groups of people that want to be a part of that nonsense, and then there's going to be the groups of people living on the outside, Mad Max style, like this guy.
It could happen. Actually, I have a book idea that is just like that type of scenario that I haven't written at all. I've just written like an outline for.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Vince, I would read it. That sounds like something I'd be right into. So let me know when you get it done.
All right. I haven't even looked at it in months, but I should. Have you heard of the fourth turning?
Yes.
It's the idea that every 80 years or so, things get riled up. And I have a video. It's actually a few minutes long. I want to show people. It's a quick few-minute description of the fourth turning and what it is. And it kind of justifies that this could happen now and that we've seen a trend. And now could be sort of the time when something like this happens. Not a zombie apocalypse per se, but like a Great Depression or a war or something like that. So let's watch that real quick. And this is by Digital Finance Weekly, actually. And it's Fourth Turning Explained in 4 minutes. So check out Digital Finance Weekly, I guess. This was a pretty good video that they did, a quick interview.
But types of generations, what we later call archetypes, tend to recur in the same order,
right,
historically.
So it's almost like a curve. Of,
well, it's a wave. When you look at their impact on history,
right,
it's a wave.
Uh-huh.
But the actual generations, for instance, a generation that, you know, sort of a heroic history making changing generation, mm-hmm, you know, that takes the country through great wars and founds all kinds of new institutions. Typically is followed by a rather timid, risk-averse generation. They were the children during the war. You know, they're careful not to upset, you know, everything that was just created. Everyone just lost all these lives on their behalf. Ooh, you know.
Right.
And a good example of that would be the GI generation, uh-huh, generation went through World War II, and the so-called silent generation, who were the kids of World War II and the Great Depression. And they were famous for, you know, I don't want anything to go on my permanent record, you know,
right,
and they were very cautious. They were very risk averse. They all dressed in 3-piece suits, you know, in their early 20s. They played by the rules, and ultimately they did very well economically. They got rewarded by the rules. You know, this is the generation that's today in their late 70s and 80s, and they're all getting defined benefit pension plans. They're all doing really well,
right?
You know, and for a variety of reasons, they've done very well economically. But then you have other generations which have different locations in history and different characteristic orders. For instance, following a generation like boomers, which come of age during these periods that periodically happen in American history, these great awakenings,
mm-hmm,
these great upheavals in the culture. You know, when we reinvent art and literature and dynamics between races and ethnicities and just reinvent the culture. I mean, that's what happens during awakenings. And religion, you know, typically too in our history. Those things happen during awakenings. And following these generations, you usually have a left alone generation. We call the nomad archetype. And this would be like Generation X.
Uh-huh.
You know, these are the left alone kids. You know, these are the kids that no one had time for because everyone was finding themselves. You know what I mean? But Gen Xers.
By the way, as you say that, I'm thinking about Macaulay Culkin and the
there
movie.
We go, Home yeah. Alone.
Right? Yes.
But what's interesting and fascinating to us is that Gen Xers is not the first of this kind of
right.
generation. The Lost Generation had that same. The Gilded Generation. These are all kind of bad boy generations, you know, just by their names. Lost, Gilded, Cavalier is another one going back into the 17th century. So these are very, those are fascinating archetypes. But they come in certain characteristic orders. Now, that order is connected to, and not only in American history, but we think in many other countries around the world, is connected to another fascinating pattern, which many people have noticed, particularly in American history, and that is what's often called the long cycle in politics.
Right.
The fact
yes.
that we have major civic crises that kind of redefine who we are as a nation, politically, institutionally, in very fundamental ways, about once every long human life.
Right.
About 80 or 90 years. I mean, you look at the War of Spanish Succession. It was probably the first great global war in European history, which happened, you know, way back around 1700, and it was the Glorious Revolution in England. But it was a huge event in the colonies. And then about a lifetime after that, you had the American Revolution. Lifetime after that, Civil War. Lifetime after that, the Great Depression, World War II, and the lifetime after that. You're here with us today.
Here we are. Yeah.
So here we are.
That's really interesting. Like, I actually believe that the whole every 80-year cycle, things reset. And you can actually really look at history and see that it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why they think that right now is the time for it to happen. And I mean, we already had the pandemic. What's next, right? And I do want to give a shout out to Dave Beck for donating some ice cream over there on DLive. Thank you, dude. Appreciate it. The fourth turning is fascinating. I think we're at the brink of a recession or a Great Depression. And we even remember the Dust Bowl in the 1900s. We're even seeing another kind of Dust Bowl situation setting itself up in the States with the way that the water reserves are going down and the desertification and just the weather that's happening. We could see a decrease in a lot of crops coming up, which could affect
a lot of states. If we could get certain psychopaths to quit spraying things and messing with stuff, maybe a lot of that would slow down.
I think it's engineered.
But that's just my thoughts. Like, I really think it's an engineered thing.
I do
personally
too.
Because like weather manipulation machines, they're even finally admitting that they're real.
They are. They're openly using them.
I have been deleted from several platforms talking about chemtrails, and now they're telling me they're real too. And I'm just like, why did you delete me if I was telling the truth?
It happens all the time. One thing we haven't mentioned yet that I'll give a shout out to S Big Mac over there on Rumble. Radios. Even on a short-term emergency, radios, crank radios, CB radios are very valuable because they give you a lot of information on what's going on around you and help you make your decisions in the future. If you know what's going on, that you have a leg up on everyone right away. And you could also use certain radios to communicate and not just listen to information. So radios are big, big, big. No doubt.
Yeah, no. You know, I feel like the satellite phone radio type things, like I really think somebody's, you know, I think that's an important thing to have.
They are, and they're very expensive.
They are.
You have to pay monthly.
Those are super expensive, but if you even had one of those long range walkie talkies, there's a very high chance that you're going to talk to somebody else because somebody else out there might have one of those long range walkie talkies.
I love walkie talkies.
And okay, this is super funny, but my work partner lives less than 3 miles up the road from me. We have 16-mile walkie-talkies.
Yes, dude.
Just so that we can talk back and forth. We'll be sitting on the porch just right up the street from each other and be like, what you doing, buddy? You know, and it's just... It's silly, but you know what? It's a good thing to have.
Think about that.
Yeah. He's 3 miles from me, and I can go, hey, man, are you okay? Or do you need anything if something was to go out? And that's a battery-powered device.
If the power went out, you didn't have batteries or radios, how are you going to communicate with somebody that you are allied with 3 miles away? You have a meeting point and you leave a note.
Sure.
And you need paper and a writing utensil for that even. The communication is going to be tough in this kind of shit hit the fan scenario.
Now, okay. This is something cool that actually reminds me that, you know, people have made. Have you ever
homing
seen,
pigeons?
Like, what is it? The geocache. Have you ever seen
geocache,
that?
Yeah.
How people, you know, you go on these missions to find things hidden. Like that actually, in a sense, like if you're familiar with that, that would be a great way to actually communicate with other people. That, you know, if you know what I'm saying?
Secret,
like if you could establish something. Like
a secret location to hide notes.
To hide notes. I think that would be worth establishing with, you know, your community or something. Like find a good halfway point and make a secret point.
We take so much for granted. People don't even think about communication. And then I think, too, like, this is where I go. Like, what if we lose track of time and we don't know what date it is, you know?
I would actually be okay with that because I don't think we know. I don't think we're told real time and date and stuff anyway.
The calendar is definitely controversial. But still.
Yeah. No, but true. I mean, I guess Some people are, it's a psychological thing. I'll be real with you, because there's some people that have to know the time and date. That's why putting them in like a dark room for X amount of days drives them mad. But then there's some people like me that like, I could get lost, and I'd probably keep up with my own days. Like maybe be like, these are the days lost. You know what I'm saying? Like they, and wherever I'm established, like mark my days that I've been there lost, and maybe try to keep up with something like, cause sundials is another thing taken for granted, but they're anything really. A tree out in a field could be a sundial, and it could help you tell time.
True. Yeah. I'm going to take a minute just to pay some bills and let you guys know about one of our sponsors that we utilize here at the Red Pearl Project. And that is My Patriot Supply. If you want to prepare, check them out. They have things to purify water. They have systems. They have different options there. They have long-term and short-term food storage. They have seeds. They have all kinds of things. Whatever you can imagine, they have it. They even have, which we're going to start talking about here in a minute, the tablets for nuclear, what are they called? Potassium iodine, or is it potassium? What are they called? It's iodine tablets for nuclear iodine exposure.
Yeah.
They have all this stuff. And if you go there by using the link redpills.tv/patriot, then we get credit for that purchase. You are not only prepping for yourself, but you're supporting alternative news media and entertainment. That's redpills.tv/patriot, long-term, short-term food supply. One of the great things about this kind of food supply is it's dried. Rather than having a can of something that's heavy and to store and to move, this dried stuff is light, and all you do is add water, right? Or hopefully hot water if you have it. And that is a good thing. Definitely in my prepping, I'm looking to get more dried stuff, like condensed soup type things, because it takes less storage and it's lighter to carry.
Sure. So dehydrated. I'm big into, I dehydrate a lot of fruit. Like,
that's
I'm big into dehydrated fruit. It's a preferred snack of mine. And like, I think that's something and it doesn't take up a lot of space. You could take a quart-sized Ziploc bag of dried fruit
full,
you know, and as long as you eat wise and sparingly, it could last you several days.
Yeah. Oops, sorry about that.
I'm sorry.
Wait, you're good. Let's talk about nuclear events. There's this cool map. I think I showed you this. I think we talked a little bit about it, but I want to show these everyone again. I don't even know how to pronounce this, but the website's HALCYONMAPS.com. Halcyon Maps. You can see it here. They have these different maps, and one of them is actually, thanks, shout out to Ye for showing me this website. One of them is the effects of a full-scale nuclear war on the United States. Here's the full resolution. And it just shows, if there was a full-scale nuclear war on the United States, what is likely to be hit? What is the impact going to be of the fallout and your survival chances? So,
well, the good news is that according to this map, where I live on that map, I'm pretty good.
Oh, really?
I have minimal fallout.
That is awesome. So,
shelter required.
Yeah, I'll be good too, as long as it doesn't happen within. I'm right here.
Yeah, okay.
In Seattle, so I'll probably die if this happened tomorrow. Unless, though, here they say if it's. Here's the kind of the legend. Red on the map are major wildfires, so you're going to be ran out of that area. Purple. What?
I said absolutely. If the nukes don't get you, the fires will.
Yep, and purple is severe fallout. So you need to be sheltered for 3 weeks. Sheltered for 3 weeks without exposure to the outside world for 3 weeks in purple areas to survive. The blue is medium fallout, 1 to 3 weeks shelter in order to survive, which means underground, which means in a complete bubble from outside. Something, right? Fallout shelter.
Now, I, you know, looking at this map, if they aim right and they hit Yellowstone up there, and set off that geyser, we got double trouble to worry about.
Oh my goodness, yep. Thank you, Fluff 420, for donating 2 diamonds. I appreciate that. Thanks a lot. The rest of the legend is minor fallout and minimal fallout as green and kind of a yellow green. Minor fallout is 2 to 7 days in a shelter. Minimal fallout, which is the yellow, is no shelter required. But
I got the yellow.
You got yellow. No shelter required. That's good.
I'm southeast of Atlanta, so.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good spot. It's really interesting. This is like a worst case scenario shit hit the fan situation in a worldwide nuclear war, by the way. I'm actually trying to move.
Geez, country looks safe, so we know who will be good.
Yeah.
They're in Wisconsin.
I'm going to stay on the coast.
There here. You
go. So, might make it. We'll see.
Utah looks like it's done for.
Yeah, dude. Oh my gosh.
And what do they got against Montana and North Dakota? Like,
they have a lot of nukes there. It's military targets.
Gotcha.
Military targets. Yeah.
Purdue over there in Denver.
Denver, civilian and military targets.
Oh, for sure. I'm actually. Like, I'm surprised, you know, looking at this map because, you know, I guess it is military targets. And there's an entire giant Air Force base that is being missed on this map on Atlanta over here. And that's totally okay because it's close to me and I don't need that. So, you know,
interesting.
Let's pretend that one isn't there and leave it like that.
Well, I doubt that it's perfect. This was from 2015, too.
Dang it.
So. I'm sure this isn't just like guaranteed. This is how it's going to be,
yeah.
But it's a good.
But reference. I mean, in a situation like that, they are going to attack military bases, you know, and hot civilian beds first.
And infrastructure, yes. The green, so the red targets are military, yellow are civilian, and green, blue are infrastructure targets. But to survive this stuff, if you get radiation poisoning, there are pills you could take to prevent it. You got to take them every so often in order to make that work. If you happen to be in one of these areas, that could help you get through it. Definitely something to have on hand now rather than later, because when it's too late, you can't get them.
This is a warning, guys. You're not going to get superpowers. Do not go play with the radiators yet.
Yeah.
As much as you want to, I really don't think the radiation is going to give you superpowers. I think it's just going to kill you. So mm-hmm. So let's not play with it, guys.
Yeah, and I wonder how the oceans will react to this kind of thing. Will we even be able to fish? Will it be a nuclear winter? Because if it's winter, you have to go south in order to survive that.
Sure. But, you know, I also, you know, be getting into, like, the conspiracy world, being Captain Conspiracy, I think, because there's kind of proof in like hieroglyphs and stuff like that, that the world seen nuclear fallout before and came back. So, I mean, would it be detrimental if it happened? Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. But do I think that there'd be enough smart people that went and hid underground to possibly help repopulate the Earth later? Yes.
Yeah, you know what? Especially the initial blasts, I think people will be surprised at how many people survive. If you look at the bombs in Japan, which are pretty much the only reference we have, Nagasaki and Iwo Jima.
Yes.
Then most of the people survived, believe it or not. And I mean, we have to consider that now we have stronger bombs, but still, I think a lot of people would survive, especially if they're able to shelter underground or something along those lines. If we go into a complete nuclear winter, though, that's another story. That increases the death rate exponentially. Okay. But honestly, people could survive this type of thing. Jiroshima.
We've actually on my show on the past couple Sundays, we've been running our own special covering all of this nuclear type information. So, if you want to know a little bit more about like nuclear fallout and stuff, make sure you check in tomorrow, because there's definitely the ending episode, and we're talking about that kind of stuff. So.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Cool.
Yeah.
On unconstitutionalawakening.com.
Correct. And we're on Rumble and BitChute. So, and of course, everywhere that you can listen to us, like you were mentioning earlier, we're totally on listening platforms. So.
Check it out. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, we thought nuclear stuff was an important subject. I really do, because it is, it's in the reality of the world we live in, it's a real threat.
It could happen.
So
even an accident, even on accident, it could happen.
Even on accident, and if one goes off on accident, you know they're not going to buy an accident, and it's just going to turn into a mess.
Right. So never let a crisis go to waste.
We you know, it's just one of the things we covered. There has been several near nuclear wars, thanks to, you know, between Russia and America.
Oh yeah.
Because of people, you know, making mistakes on computer numbers and stuff, even. So like it's a real thing that could happen, and it has almost happened. So I think it's best to be prepared in some kind of sense, you know, and you know, for anything, but as well as, you know, be prepared for anything. Like,
yeah, hopefully the aliens protect us from full-out nuclear war.
I would hope. Like, I hope they finally intervene and be like, "Okay, guys, stop."
Yeah.
Like, this is the time to call it quits before you eradicate yourselves.
Seriously, man, super cool stuff, man.
It really is.
I'm honestly, I might be too late, but I prepare for this stuff all the time to the best of my ability. And the more I do, the more I realize how unprepared I am, man. But I do want to move away from the city, be more sustainable, be more frugal. I live my life in a super frugal way just in case. And anything extra, prep. And it's like, we might have to live this way in the future. Who knows? Especially if the economy crashes globally and war happens in different places and stuff. It's like, we have to be prepared to survive in a worst case scenario. I truly believe that. Is it even worth it to practice this stuff, to educate yourself on these things, practice skills, if it's not going to happen, do you think?
I do, because I think a lot of things are lost arts and need to be passed down, because you know what? If it doesn't happen to me, I at least want my kids to be able to do it, so that in case it happens to them, they're prepared too.
Yeah, and we talked about the skills. And
get a hobby. Like, I mean, honestly, get a hobby and learn a skill. Something that you're interested in, because that skill could become the thing that helps you get through a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, and if you learned how to bake, if you learned how to cook, can, preserve, hunt, fish, if you were practicing something that was more engineering or tech savvy or like mechanical in nature, all of these things translate to arts that society values anyways, even while it's thriving. I don't think it's lost time. I think it's valuable still. And especially when you get to the fundamentals and the nitty gritty of things that are kind of lost in today's world, working with your hands, understanding the fundamentals of things, and
rolling pasta is something that a lot of people don't actually know how to do anymore. Like, it's a weird art, you know what I'm saying? But like,
yeah,
there's old grandmas in Italy that have been rolling pasta with their hands for 50, 60 years. And like, you know, that's a skill that, you know, I implore you, if you have that old Italian grandma out there that's rolling pasta, go sit down with her and learn how to roll that pasta, because that might actually be something very important that you learn how to do that could save you in the future at some point.
Yeah, and you could dry that stuff out, keep it forever. Another thing too, think about this, if you're kind of like really deep into it and you think this stuff's a real possibility, and let's say you're a baker, well, what do you do if you don't have eggs and you don't have flour? How do you make eggs and flour? These kinds of things are what we have to think about as well. How do you make hardtack? I learned how to make hardtack. I made some because I just wanted to know how the hell to do it.
There's still hardtack in the government lockup from the Civil War.
That's crazy. For the hardtack is just like a cracker.
Yeah.
And they keep it for a long time. Also, though, one thing I haven't done, but it's important to know, what if we didn't have ovens? What if you didn't have an oven, but you need to bake bread? How do you bake bread outside of an oven? Practice, because it's fucking hard. I guarantee you. I've never done it, but I've seen
there's a bunch of different ways. There's definitely a bunch of different ways, but I can give. There is an inexpensive way using found bricks and slate rock, because these are things you'll find out wildly in, you know, different places.
Bricks in the wild. Around. Wild bricks.
How many times have you seen an old chimney?
All the time. And I think a lot of the shit that we are using in this type of shit at the fan scenario is repurposed, recycled stuff, including metal. If you had to forge something, you're not going to create. Go ahead. I'm going on a tangent.
So go find that old chimney, or again, find some blocks and find some slate rock, and you can easily, and this is something you can go to YouTube. I could even share the link on the Red Pill Project for everybody, and you could build a little oven out of rocks that you could put fire underneath and bake bread or pizza or whatever you created out there while you're, you know, foraging and stuff. To, you know, there's definitely answers out there. You didn't always have an oven that you could just walk up to and push the button and it turns on. You know what I'm saying?
Like, oh, yeah.
That's still a modern thing that hasn't been around for a long time. And people have been baking food since forever. Like bread. Yeah. Bread is one of the main staples of human existence, I believe.
Yep.
Bread and rocks really created society, if you think about it.
Bread and rocks. True, dude. Like,
I know it's breaking it down too much, but it really is. Like,
hey, makes sense. Thanks, Fluff, for the ice cream. Appreciate it, dude.
Sweet.
I was thinking about metal today and skills. What skills do I have? What do I want to improve on? What do I want my focus to be on? Kind of thing. And I was thinking about metallurgy and kind of like blacksmithing, but more importantly, creating metal. How do you make iron? And these kinds of things, right? It's a skill that probably less than 0.1% of people are going to have in a shit-at-the-fan scenario. Probably you're not going to see any of it till later when everything kind of smooths over. But think about that. To be able to create something out of metal is going to be so valuable. And a way that just me and you could do this is by finding metal that already exists and adding it to iron, or just melting it down and then repurposing it. But there's a science that comes to it where you got to get the carbon out in order to go from crappy brittle iron to cast iron, wrought iron, to eventually steel, if you want to go that route. It's like a whole science and crazy thing that it's lost. People don't know how to do it. But you can create knives, spears, all types of things. You know what's a really cool thing that I've been following too for a while now, and I want to try it out? Napping.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
napping. Will you tell people what that is for anyone who's like, what's napping? And like, what, you just go lay down and chill, close your eyes?
No, I mean, sure. I mean, there's definitely that napping if you want to do, you know, if you want to just take a nap. I totally implore you to go take a nap.
Like, pro nap.
You know, it's probably something good. But as far as, I'm trying to find the best way to put it, so I'm actually looking for a better definition.
Oh, I could explain it. So napping is when you have a different type of stone. You could even use glass or things like this, and you use another stone to hit it to create sharp edges, and that's how the natives would make things like arrowheads, spearheads, and things like this. You just keep hitting it, chipping off little pieces, and you design these knives, essentially.
And of course, there is specific kind of rock now. You know, mm-hmm. You've got to have rock that kind of flakes, you know, like slate rock, like I was mentioning earlier, or flint rock is another good one.
Yeah, true. And actually, I saw people do it on Facebook yesterday, because I follow napping groups and stuff just because I think it's cool. And they had this competition out in the sticks somewhere. All these hillbillies get together. They shattered a fucking porcelain tank. Everybody grabs a piece and they each nap their own arrowhead. And then they have a competition. It's judged. And whoever wins gets to wear the toilet seat.
I've actually even seen people do napping on like deer antlers and stuff.
Oh, damn.
You know, to make blades or to make you know, arrowheads and such, because again, this goes back into the hunting and stuff. Like you mentioned earlier, you're not going to be able to carry all your, you know, guns and rifles and stuff like that. Sure, you might have one, maybe two, but you're going to eventually run out of ammo. So you're going to have to come up with something else. And knowing how to make an arrowhead or a spearhead or a bow or a knife is a good skill. I actually know how to make a longbow. I was taught by some Native Americans.
Oh, damn. I've seen videos, and it's not easy.
When I was in New York, I visited the Seneca Indian Nation, and I totally went to like a class they had over there, and somebody taught me how to make my own longbow, and I think that's a good skill that I'm glad that I learned, because it could come in handy one day.
Yeah, I would love to learn how to make a bow. I've watched videos, full processes. I've spent several hours watching people make bows.
Yeah,
and there's so much, it's such a niche thing. That's like something that I'd have to decide, like, okay, I'm going to be the bow guy.
Yeah.
And, sure. You know, it's not just like, you can't learn it all. So
you can't learn it all. Yeah. You're right. I'm actually teaching my children currently how to shoot a bow.
Oh, that's awesome. They have little short bows.
They should have. I totally bought them little kids like training bows. So they've got real arrows and a target, but they've got little bows for their size. And
yeah,
my little girl's doing great. So
me and my brother had like little foot and a half, probably about 20-inch bows.
Growing Sounds up. About the same. Yeah,
but they were legit like native made bows.
Nice. It was cool. I totally Amazoned those ones, but it was a birthday present type deal. But
I wonder if we still have them. We even had like the what do they call it, where you hold the arrows?
Oh, the quill.
Quill, yeah. They catch quills too, like rabbit fur.
There's a really awesome picture floating around out there somewhere of me in one of my cosplays as the Green Arrow, and I'm carrying around a real deal longbow that I own and a green quill full of arrows.
That's cool.
I think it's a good skill. Like I actually learned how to shoot a bow before I learned how to shoot a gun. My grandfather told me that it was more important to learn how to shoot the cave type weapons than it was to, you know, jump right into something as powerful as a gun.
Yeah, dude.
There was reasoning behind it, and I respect it. Like it's a good skill to have.
Yeah, and one thing that someone brought up to me during one of our private conversations on the Red Pill Project was like, people think one thing, the way that like a shit at the fan scenario will be, they say like, I do this or whatever, right? When it comes down to it, you don't really know what you're going to do until it happens. And I kind of go that way too. Like, you think you're more prepared than you are, and then you think you do a certain thing in a situation where reality is a little different. For instance, in a situation where there's firearms involved and gangs of people, it's totally crazy. And then some people train all the time with firearms. You know what I mean? Like, I am not trained. I'm not a trained professional with a firearm. Yes, I use them. This kind of thing is cool, but it's like, unless you're training, unless you have a squad who also trains with you, you're not going to be saving the world with your firearms in this situation, all right?
Right. Like, no, chill. No. And in a situation like this, if you do have your firearm, I think it would be more better. Here we go talking about it.
Way more better.
I think it'd be way more better to save those rounds for, you know, a situation where you would really need them instead of what, like, just wasting them on something. Like, so yeah. you could totally hunt your rabbits and your deer with a bow, mm-hmm. and save those rounds for when the bear decides to sneak up on you in the woods or other people or something. Like, there's, you know, there'd be more. You got to use your brain in this whole situation. Like, this is one of those times you slow down for a minute, think about what you're doing before you do it.
Absolutely, man. I think psychology is a big part of it too. That's important, especially if you're around a lot of people. Understanding psychology could be the difference between life and death. In like a more city type situation. Just my opinion. I think that, yeah, for sure.
I think some people would make it, you know, out of the city. I think there's enough people out there that probably got their head on their shoulders, right, and are already good urban survivors. and you know, they'll do all right. I mean, let's be real. Look at the homeless population all over the country. Like, we've got some of the best urban survivors there is.
Well, so, but they rely on government aid. They're going to be a part of
some
groups.
Some do. Some don't. Like, I mean,
some don't. I think that with the amount of drugs a lot of them do and that kind of thing, they'll probably be the ones that no one wants nothing to do with.
Especially like your groups that are like going and living by a van, in their van by a river now. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're already, they're kind of already living that
portable
nomadic type life off by themselves anyway, you know, without, you know, they're already surviving. You know what I mean? Like,
kind of.
They kind of got a good little head start, I think, on people.
Maybe. Some people. I think
sure.
I think the minority of like homeless people.
Because sure.
Out here, at least in Seattle, most of the homeless people are on drugs. They're mentally ill. These kinds of things. That's not a good state to be in for survival.
Yeah. We have a variety of homeless people here, and I've seen the homeless people from the kinds you're talking about to the kinds that took it as an opportunity, and like you don't actually see. You don't actually see them. They're just off in the woods somewhere living it up. You know what I mean? Like, we have a bunch of national forests out here in Georgia, and it is well known that
people live out there.
There's feral people living out there in those woods.
Damn.
So, you know, watch yourself.
I know there's at least one hippie in the forest over here that has a nice little yurt.
Nice. I mean, and I bet you, you know what? I bet you he's got the happiest ass life there is.
Yeah, I think he's doing okay for himself.
He probably enjoys the little things more than the rest of us.
Probably, dude. Also, something that comes to mind is like, if you're staying put, you start thinking about, do you own your house? Do you owe money on your house? Is the bank going to get your house? And then are you going to have to relocate? Right? So you'll have like, if that happens, people are going to pile into one person's house that can keep their house, making survival even more difficult. And then there's the government aspect where they could declare martial law, come in, declare your area theirs, you know, fight them or join them. Most people are going to join them, and in this whole kind of crazy worst case scenario type situation,
something like that happens, I guess y'all will be covering the news story where Jim Bob Shorts was gunned down.
That's what a lot of people say.
He stood his ground. Like, I mean, I will.
That's what people say. It's like, I've seen different polls that were given out to people where it's like, what would you do in this situation where the government comes in? It's like, standing my ground till the end. I'll join them. Most people
couldn't even get me to wear a mask. You think they're going to get me to give up my land?
Right. Most people, believe it or not, are going to just fold immediately, especially when it comes to their family being hungry and these kinds of things, despite, I think, what they say in these polls.
Sure.
The small fringe minority are going to be outliers in the situation. You're talking probably 5% of people.
But I mean, to be honest with you, if it went into a, you know, martial law situation and I had to worry about them showing up, that's when the plan of action to actually
leave.
Get the hell out of Dodge,
yeah,
you know, goes into play. Like, I've got to get away from where I'm supposed to be, so that way they can't find me right then and there. And that's why I talk about vanishing like into the woods and stuff, because I know these feral people survive out there every day as it is now and go unseen. So
I couldn't,
I think,
dude.
It's plausible.
I'd have a hard time surviving in the forest out here. But I'm going to be there. I'm going to be right near it. So it's an option. Honestly, I haven't decided on what I would do in that kind of situation.
Commandeer a boat and let's sail the seas as pirates, buddy.
I kind of do want a sailboat. But it's like, where do you go? I could go down to Oregon or go to Canada.
We could go find one of those unmapped islands that they try to hide from us on Google Maps and stuff.
But man, survival no matter where you are in this country is tough. Or if you're in Canada, even tougher. Sure.
Yeah.
So especially like me, it's all rainforesty.
Wet. When you start getting into those cold areas, I think that's when you have a little bit of trouble. Because like I like my warmth, and we only have a couple cold months a year. So
that's nice. It's cold and wet here most of the year. So it's like, I don't want to live in the forest.
It's hot and wet here, like the rainforest.
Holy smokes. Well, do you have any final thoughts on this stuff? We're going to wrap it up here so we can prepare.
I think I think everybody should take the time out of their day to look into some preparedness and
maybe
look into maybe getting a skill of some kind. You know, like the littlest thing could prepare you for, you know, a major problem. So, you know, take it into consideration. Check out his sponsor that he was talking about there, because I'm sure they've got some good stuff to offer you.
Redpills.tv/patriot. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they got some great stuff there to offer you for these kind of situations. So
definitely.
Like, you know, I think this is something everyone should consider, especially if you're out there listening, watching, whatever you may be doing. Like, it could mean life or death for you or your family. So definitely
it could. Hopefully not. And if not, you learn a cool skill, you learn an art, and you could teach other people that art.
And that's even better.
Yeah. And it's so fulfilling too to learn how to guard and to feed yourself, even if it's not like going to sustain you forever. It's nice. It's a beautiful thing, no matter what you do, and it's all really art at the end of the day. So do it. I'll continue to prepare. I am nowhere near prepared, man. Every day getting better, but if this happens tomorrow, I'm screwed. I'm in the heart of Seattle, essentially. Well, you know, close enough, and I've been working relentlessly to get the hell out of here. So hopefully soon I'll be in a better spot, but we'll see.
Don't worry, Vince. Unconstitutional Awakening actually spreads to Seattle as well. We have some folks up there, so I'll make sure they're looking for you to get you to safety.
I wonder, you should put me in touch with them. I don't know where they're at.
I will. Yes, that would be a great thing. I think it would be. Y'all have some interesting conversations. They're a very interesting person, and I love them to death. So.
All right. Put me in touch with them. Thank you for joining me once again, Jim Bob. I appreciate it. These conversations are always fantastic, and we're going to have to continue this conversation another day for sure. Because I'm not stopping preparing. I know Nate was supposed to join us tonight, but he had some plans today. He got totally sidetracked. Guess what he was doing? Prepping. So that just shows you how important this kind of stuff is, which is great. I love you, Nate. Hopefully next time you can make it. But that's how important this stuff is. You guys, in 39 minutes, episode 4 of the Mars Chronicles is airing everywhere the Red Pill Project airs. So tune into that. You'll see the notifications pop up here shortly. That's with David Whitehead and Joshua Reed. And they have a special guest from the military to talk about the next Mars adventure. Other than that, we will be live again with you Monday morning with Morning Coffee to go over the news with Andrea and myself, followed by the Daily Dose every day, Monday through Thursday next week, and then back into Fringe and Makes You Think. So thank you all for subscribing. Thank you all for supporting us. Thank you all for using our sponsors like redpills.tv/patriot to prepare. We appreciate it, and thank you for all of your comments, donations during the show. Very cool. And thank you for hitting that plus sign on Rumble, because that helps other people find us. Pretty good, not too shabby, you guys. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll be with you soon here again. And lastly, follow Jim Bob's podcast. You could find it on Rumble.
We're not live yet, but we try to upload an episode at least every other day at the least.
So you're putting out a lot of content, and you could find everything at unconstitutionalawakening.com for more Jim
Everything.
Bob.
You can even get you one of these cool shirts if you'd like.
Oh yeah, new merch. Plus he's on TikTok and Facebook. So
I'm
find him everywhere.
Man. I try to be. I'm trying to haunt the internet.
I love it. That's cool, dude. Thanks for joining me once again. Everybody take care. We'll see you soon. Peace.
Bye, y'all.